Hailing frequencies open, and welcome to Star Trek Discoverage, the live podcast that boldly goes into excruciating detail about this week's episode of Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Aaron Coker, a.k.a. Caliban, and that's no moon. It's a cryo ship. Joining me on the show, as usual, is my co-host. She's also the co-host of the Generations Geek podcast, a more or less family-friendly celebration of geekdom. It's Ella Pearson. Ella, welcome back to Discoverage.
Thank you.
Ella, great to have you here. Great to be here in general. Great to be alive.
I'll tell you what, it sure is. And I'll tell you something else, is that last week I said that my neighbor kept setting the fire alarm off.
That's right.
And this week he moved out.
Oh, good. Okay.
So that was a prelude. We're feeling good.
A change of, a life for him. So, okay, good. Good deal. It's
definitely a good deal for me.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to have neighbors, and I don't know if you're are you in a house or like an apartment or where are you at?
No, I'm in a very decent sized apartment building. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard to have apartment. What do you call them? Neighbors, I suppose. But just it's not like having a neighborhood, and you know, Mr. Rogers is there, and everybody's having a good time. I find that people in apartments tend to not really want to know too much about the people that they're living next to, which is weird because you live very close to them and you live in a big building too, and you're kind of all in it together.
All together. You know? Last year I lived in like a fourplex. There were four units. I missed that.
Yeah. Were you friendly with the other people in the building?
I was friendly with the other women that lived in the building.
Okay. Makes sense.
The first floor, both units were all guys. And then the top floor was me and my friends. And then across the hall from us was just like six queer women living their best lives. So we were friendly with them. I didn't really speak to the men downstairs.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good.
It worked out well.
Yeah. It can really be variable, though. Sometimes I've lived in places where, you know, my next door neighbor's like, oh, I'm making brownies. Come on in, have some brownies. So this is great. And then I've lived in situations like yours with the, I smell smoke coming from the other apartment.
Yeah, why are we setting fires so frequently?
Here we are out on the sidewalk again. Yeah.
Again, the fire department again, you know, but now he's moved out, hopefully. He won't need to set fires wherever he's living now, and I won't need to turn my Alexa guard on when I leave my apartment.
He's some other firehouse's problem now.
Exactly. Okay. The Dinkytown firehouse, I heard. So they have nothing. They okay. just got their plate is already info. So full.
Yeah.
And they just got something else.
Well, let's talk about Star Trek Discovery. We've just seen the third episode of the fourth season of Star Trek Discovery, an episode called Choose to Live, and we're here to talk all about it. But first, as always, a warning, we are setting course for the spoiler zone listeners, so be warned. We're glad you've decided to join us, but if you haven't seen the episode, spoilers are incoming. The official synopsis for Choose to Live is Burnham and Tilly hunt the killer of a Starfleet officer as Stamets and the science team race against the clock to prevent the anomaly from killing anyone else. This episode was written by Terry Hughes Burton, who's a writer and a co-executive producer of Star Trek Discovery. This is her first script for the show, but in the past she's written for shows such as The 100, Warrior Nun, and Eureka. The episode was directed by Christopher J. Byrne. Byrne previously directed the first season episode Into the Forest I Go, and will be directing another future season 4 episode, as well as an episode of Strange New Worlds coming out next year. The episode has no star date, but the date, of course, is still 3190. And no real facts about this episode. This one is hot and fresh out of the oven, so we're going to dive right into it. What do you think about Choose to Live?
I liked it. I enjoyed myself. I could have some nitpicks, but overall I thought it was a good, like, example of, you know, sometimes I think, at least I miss, like, the kind of episodic television that we get with the other Star Trek series, where it's like they had 24 episodes, they can spend an episode doing whatever they want.
Yeah.
This seemed like a good compromise between like, oh, we have to get to the point kind of quickly, but also we're going to have a fun little, like, not quite a heist. We're going to have a fun little fugitive hunt.
Yeah.
We're going to put Gray in a new body.
Yeah, that's a good point about the sort of different storytelling that they use in the modern shows now. I had trouble interfacing with this one, mostly because it was so scene to scene. And it felt like, you know, there's some episodes where we slow down and we're doing like one specific kind of plot. And there's other ones where we cover more stuff. And it felt like they just had a bunch of things they had to either move forward or wrap up. Ostensibly because there's something else, there's some other story node that they're approaching, you know, in the future. But having to bounce back and forth between all the things was a little disorienting for me. And I did like that we finally got a resolution to getting a body, you know, for Gray and having him finally, you know, be able to share space with Adira. But I packed into the, like, you know, the back end of this episode, like you said, about like a hunt for a murderer and like a chase. It felt like that could have been its own thing, or at least taken more center stage.
Yeah, I definitely I think that it got somewhere, the episode got rushed. However, I do think that it's the best it can be with all those things packed in. Like, yeah. I think she worked all of this in flawlessly. But there was a lot going on.
Yeah, it was 55 minutes long. It was a packed episode. Yeah. It was interesting to see, was it Guardian Z? It sounds like an anime, but the guy who kind of you know, Skyped in to help out with this transfer. I was kind of wondering. They didn't end up doing this, but I was wondering if they were going to use, like, one of the Vulcans for this process, because we've established
that
in Picard.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, we've established in the Picard, I don't know if it's a certain kind of Soong body, but, you know, they can use telepathy, or at least use mind melds. The Golden Soji, whose character's name I can't remember right now, but was able to do that. So, but they got the mind transferred. This is, like, totally fresh, you know, territory for the Trill and for Star Trek. And I have so many questions, which I hope will be answered in the course of season 4. But Gray is a separate entity now. Does Gray still have the minds of his former hosts in him? Like, in the way, will he feel separated from that Trill sort of mental collective?
I mean, I bet I would think that he would have some memories of, like, the specific memories that he accessed maybe when he like had his symbiont, but I would assume that now that it's this new fresh body, that it's not like when you talk to Gray you're talking to it. What is it, Tall?
Yeah,
is that the symbiont? Like, you're not talking to all of the Talls.
Yeah. It's just it's weird. I'm trying to.
Yeah, Guardian Z was super chill about it. Yeah, he was like, but yeah, he'll call me later.
He was like, yeah, just yeah. Let me know if everything goes all right.
Kid wakes up. I don't know. It might,
I'm gonna hit the links. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, might. I don't know. Typical might doctor. Wake up, might not wake up. Well, I could take a day. Oh my god, if that there's an episode of iCarly where somebody's fixing. Believe me, listen. Somebody's like fixing something in the apartment, and Jerry Traynor, who plays the older brother, is like, how long will this take? And the guy's like, 4 or 5. And he's like, 4 or 5, what? And the guy's like, yeah, maybe 6 or whatever it is. And that's what it felt like. Guardian Z is like, 4 or 5.
Yeah, if the doctor's not worried, then we don't need to be worried, I suppose. Burnham and Tilly go on a little mission here. Tilly's on a personal mission to change up her rhythm and to sort of find something new. And I can't help but feel that this is maybe, from a meta perspective, the writer's also kind of trying to find something new for Tilly. You know, we established that she had this ambition to be a captain and that she wanted to move up in the ranks. And that's something that, you know, you can pay off in some cases, like Burnham becoming the captain, but I don't think that we should expect to see Tilly be a captain anytime soon. And so to find a sort of a new thing for her, a new chapter of her character to embark on, it seems like they're kind of trying things out, just like Tilly is.
Well, exactly. And it's interesting because I feel like she used to always be like, she was coded as the, oh, she's super like peppy and excited all of the time and very motivated. And so I think it's really interesting to see her instead feeling this hesitance or feeling some confusion. And I think it's interesting to see her like trying all of this new stuff.
That has to happen for somebody who's in Starfleet. You know, the idea that, like, I get to go to the stars. I get to see aliens and I get to, you know, fly at warp speed places. And, like, the first couple months after you've done it, it's like, yeah, I got a job. I have to, you know, swab the deck or whatever it is. Yeah. It must at some point lose a little bit of its luster. So maybe she's got that going on. Also, I think there's a thing, too, with people or characters who are prodigies, you know, and who are told that we expect great things from them once they begin doing something and they meet other people who are also amazing and smart. You know, suddenly you lose that motivation of, well, I'm going to do anything. I'm a special, you know, chosen one. And you start to think like, well, what does that mean? Like, what am I going to do with myself? And it's interesting. It's like you get sometimes on other Trek shows characters that are like, oh, maybe I want to get a promotion or maybe I'm getting kind of tired of what I do, but I like that aspect of her character, and I hope that they continue to explore that in interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they will. It seems like this is going to be like quite the subplot.
Yeah, and you know, the entire crew, who we haven't seen a lot of this season, but like they all have a totally new page to write on. I mean, they are almost 1,000 years in their own futures, you know, and, you know, the galaxy, chaotic as it is at this point, is kind of their oysters. So I wonder what paths that their lives will take.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I was thinking today as we were watching this episode, I was like, it's very applicable to, I think, everyone's current situation post/during the pandemic. It's like, oh, these all of a sudden like years go by, right? And then you're like, what am I doing? Where are we? What direction are we going?
Yeah. Yeah, I have 12 balled up calendar pages on my floor and nothing to show for it. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, suddenly I have this bucket full of things I crocheted. I don't know where they came from. I don't know how I did it.
Yeah. I would think that like every single second that we don't see them, like in their downtime, they must just be like scanning Wikipedia, just rolling through pages, you know, trying to catch up on everything that they've lost. I think, you know, Stamets is a genius, and I think that, you know, certain scientific principles apply throughout the centuries, but like for him to go to the Vulcan Science Council and be like, hi, I'm a caveman from 1,000 years ago, here's the theory that I have,
literally,
you know, he must have to like, you know, give me a basic physics text. I want to make sure everything's the same still. Or like Burnham, like she must be going through, okay, the treaty of like 2582. Okay, you know, she didn't want to like go to like a negotiation and be like, oh shoot, I forgot about that one thing that happened a while ago because I wasn't alive when it happened.
Yeah, the studying, like the preparing for their meetings just like upped by like at least 3 hours.
Yeah, right. They're all Starfleet.
It's like everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone has one of those, like, you know, in Captain America 2, when he's, like, writing, he has a little notebook with him all the time, and he writes down everything people say that he missed.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, okay, sure, that, okay, the treaty, yep, uh-huh, okay.
Everyone's notes app is
matter?
Full.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're all Starfleet geniuses, and of course, their interface in the future is very, you can speedily learn and read things, I'm sure. Or they, maybe they have, like, their beds talk to them at night, and they sleep learn.
Do you think that like hangs on in the future? They're like, yeah.
I think that's coming
back
in. There's
always some guy that's like, if you just play, if you just ask the computer to play you like the Romulan language while you're sleeping, I swear to you, it'll take you 2 weeks and you'll be able to speak it.
Sleep learning is coming back. That thing that you see in the mad scientist's lab where the two wires and the lightning bolt goes up between the two wires, like that's coming back. And then, of course, I don't know if they've done it yet, but they have to stick in that classic prop where it's the two laser beams that shoot. You know, it was in all those, like, TNG episodes, and I think they snuck it into some DS9 episodes, too. All those things are coming back in the future. It's all cyclical.
Well, exactly, and it's necessary. Maybe if we're lucky, maybe we'll see a television.
Yeah. What if TV came back?
Imagine that.
Yeah. Big, like, tube TVs come back. Oh, this is the old thing we're trying again.
Yeah. We just wanted to see.
Well, they brought ninjas back. I know that. We got ninjas in this episode. Romulan
and thank God.
Ninjas. Yeah, and thank God. The Kuat Malat are in this episode. And, of course, Gabrielle returns to lead Tilly and Burnham into this mission about this Kuat Malat sister who, like all Kuat Malat, is following what they think is a lost cause. And it turns out to be something a little different than everybody thought it was.
It's so funny when she shows up on screen because it's as if she's my long lost mother. I'm like, mom, every time. I'm like, is that,
like, oh,
my,
hey.
Is that mom?
She's back.
Yeah, I liked how she and Burnham were kind of sus with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I still don't know where we're at on that. Like the last time. So I can't remember the title of the episode, but it was the trial episode the last time we saw her, right? And it seemed like...
I think so.
They're in an interesting position because... And it's good writing, I think, where, you know, it's a long-lost mother. You expect them to run into each other's arms, but instead it's she's, you know, future Iron Man, and she can't be with... You know, she's protecting her, but she can't be with her. And then later it's, oh, you're going to be, you know, kind of on the opposite side of this trial, so that kind of sets us apart. And, like, one of these days, I wonder, like, when we're not watching these people off screen, do they meet up for, like, tea or something and cakes or something? Do they have any connection? Or is it like, for us, she just shows up in Burnham's life and she's like, oh, mom, oh, no.
They must send little notes back and forth, right, over she's like, you know,
hollow emails send a letter or to my something.
Mom. Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. Sorry. Oh, my God. The Alexa heard me say computer. Could you hear that?
What do you say instead of computer?
No, I say
if you don't
computer.
Want to wake up the Alexa.
Well, normally she doesn't do that. Normally it's pretty good at like knowing that I'm not asking it a question. That was terrifying.
Well, in this mission, it turns out that they're going to try to meet up with this lady, but we don't want to bring phasers. That's not the Kuat Malat way. And so... We get Tilly and Burnham get swords, which seems like a bad idea. Everything works out, I guess, except for the other girl that was with them, who I don't remember her name or if she had one, but she gets killed. But I would think that I feel like we've heard in the past that there's some Starfleet training involves like swords or ancient weaponry, right? You don't want to be caught in a queue scenario where they give you an axe or something and you're totally helpless because you don't know how to use an axe.
I was thinking about that during this episode. I was like, I bet that those courses are sick. I bet they get to take like every class or like, okay, here's like sword. Today we're doing swords 101.
Right.
And next week it's archery or whatever.
The
and
necklace.
I bet it's like the funniest thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to be caught in a Gamesters of Triskelion situation and you're screwed because you don't know how to use a rope dart.
Like, it's just a bunch of cadets out there with they're like, oh, and they're all doing the same thing. It's like, they're like, oh, these are too heavy. I can't lift this. Yeah, I don't know what. I'm used to lifting these. I mean, how much does a phaser weigh, do you think? A pound?
It's probably all plastic or future plastic, right? It's probably pretty light.
Yeah, future plastic, yeah.
Yeah.
Episode, they're just like, oh!
Bunch of cadets, a bunch of medical teams all standing ready for when they inevitably chop each other's arms off.
Yeah.
That was like, it was, I know that we had to have that lieutenant at the beginning die because, you know, that sets the stakes for where we go. But I was like, he only got stabbed in the belly. Like, this is the 32nd century. Don't they have, like, just beams on the wall that can shoot out and, like, put you back together?
I don't know. Pretty rough. Stabbed in the gut.
That's true.
Pretty brutal.
Although Elnor would have cut his head off.
Well, and oh, exactly. But he's a tryhard.
That's he is absolutely a tryhard. That's true. I like the it's not a moon. It's a cryo ship in this instance. I'll give my girlfriend credit. It's not a Death Star. It's a Life Star. And it's transporting. Aww. It's transporting all these aliens to a new planet in kind of the world is hollow and I touch the sky kind of way. It's a cool idea. Do you think I don't feel like we got a real good look at these guys, but they seem kind of weird and cool. Do you think that these guys will come back or play a role in the later season?
Maybe we'll get like a cameo of them joining the Federation. That'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if we'll, I mean, maybe they'll have the key to stopping the interspace, whatever it is that moves on its own.
Well, if it's alive and can be telepathed, maybe they
exactly.
will.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh my gosh. We cracked the code.
We got to delete this.
I can't
sorry,
believe
Pyramid.
We've done it again.
I'm sorry.
Cut the cameras.
I did like the scene where Stamets goes to the Science Academy and he's got this idea, and I want to, we don't know what it is and we shouldn't, it's a mystery, but he's pretty smart. And I feel like the way this show works, you know, he really thinks it's this dark matter anomaly. Like, he must be right in some way, right? There weren't any tachyons or radiation like he expected to see, but I have a feeling he's right. He just doesn't know how he's right yet.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, maybe he missed something while he was studying. At this point, I really have zero theories. Not like I ever have any, really any more theories than approximately zero. But, I don't know. I think that, we talked about this before, it's got to be alive somehow.
Yeah, that would, yeah.
For it to move around like that.
Otherwise, well, because otherwise, who's the real villain? I guess in the last season we had a natural disaster that, you know, wasn't alive, and we had a villain in Osyra, so they wouldn't do that again with this season, would they? Like, there's an anomaly that's just a force of nature, and then the president of the Federation is the bad guy.
Maybe, like, somebody has just, like, the biggest magnet ever, and they're flipping it on and off, and that moves the thing.
Right, yeah.
It's like a cartoon. An anvil drops.
Yeah, Q is running a magnet under the universe and making this thing roll yeah. back and forth. Yeah, yeah. I did like, or I don't know if I liked it, but it's interesting to see that the Vulcans are still, like, shading non-Vulcan races 1,000 years from now. Like, they've reunited their society. They've renamed their planet, but they're like, oh, I see you're kind of emotional there. Interesting. Yeah, that's how's that working out for you?
It's a staple of their character.
I know, but I just think they just grow.
I was
a little
honestly
bit.
Surprised to see the what is her name? What is she? She's the president of the Science Academy. What is her deal?
The Vulcan lady.
Yes, and she straight up
Tarina?
Was like, "Oh,
yeah,
we have emotions. We just choose to suppress them." Yeah. I was like, "That is, I'm scandalized. I can't Whoa. Believe that she said that."
Oh, well, maybe they're a little more open.
To a non-Vulcan.
They totally...
Maybe in the future, yeah. But
they will tell a stranger all about the Kunat Kalafi and the Ponfar. They will not show... You're like, God, stop telling me about all the hand you're getting. Yeah.
And she let him have that moment during the mind meld. Like, she didn't, like, cut it off. I was like, anyway, that was pretty... She's being pretty nice to Book.
Yeah. That was a nice moment, and it was acted well, and I thought, like, correctly, if that's a term, on both sides. I thought the Vulcan actress, you know, played that Vulcan character well, and I think that David Ayala is really doing a great work as Book season so far. What else is going on in this episode? A lot's going on in this episode. I was thinking about... I think that they pretty much confirmed on screen that Culber is the counselor, essentially now he is filling that role. And I like that he, you know, if I was a counselor, I'd do all my sessions in the bar on the ship too. It's like, get a tumbler or something. We'll get by the fire here and just tell me what's going on.
I also kind of liked the implication that it's like, it's not normal for him to be serving in both capacities, like head or chief medical officer,
doing double
whatever
duty.
The title is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I don't know who else, it'd have to be some unnamed character that would take over the counselor role, but how are you supposed to counsel, you know, a bunch of people who just jumped however many years into the future.
That's true. Yeah, maybe he's the best person for that because he, you know, has the same circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, as somebody who has a an entirely different body, if Gray is ever trying to, you know, feels dysmorphia because of his new body, he can help him with that too.
Dude, that when he woke up and he looked at his hand, I got the chills. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I also like, too, that he was talking to Saru, like, who counsels the counselor? And then, of course, Saru is there for him when he's like, boy, you know, I've got a lot of stuff going on. And Saru's kind of helping him out with that. Everybody's good on Discovery. Everybody's good.
I bet he's got counseling appointments booked, like, through the next 5 years.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know what I mean? And he just keeps being like, yeah, I can squeeze you in if there's, like, an emergency. He's like, okay, yeah, Tilly, we can figure something out. I'm off the clock, but it's the only time I have any time.
He's just got a table in the corner of the bar and a line coming off of it. Yeah. what else? This isn't the first mind meld we've seen in Discovery, but it's the first one we've seen in this future setting, right?
Yeah.
I still do it the same way. I kind of like the mind DVR that we got, where he's sort of...
Yeah, that was good.
Seeing the thing all over again and freezing
it's
it.
It's like rewind.
Enhance. that's about all I can think of, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like so much...
A lot happened, yeah.
Yeah, they were able to, like, fit so much into this episode, but it was all, like... almost like very straightforward, or the stuff I guess with Book and Gray was like, okay, now Gray woke up and Book is moved on to the next stage of the grieving process, and and then also they fixed the issue with the fugitive, kind of.
Yeah, I like how.
Do you feel like they are normally? Is it normal for, what is it, the Kuat?
Quat-Milan?
Yeah. For them not to be prosecuted when they murder somebody in their line of work?
That was a weird moment, because she killed a Federation officer. You would argue that it wasn't, like, premeditated necessarily. But she is an alien, and she was remanded to the custody of her planet's authorities. So I don't know. I didn't know what Burnham's problem with that was. Like, if it was supposed to be another kind of chink in, like, the armor of, like, oh, what's the Federation president doing? I thought, like, oh, that seems like that makes sense. She's going to be tried by her own people. Do you know what I mean?
I guess I felt like the implication was that, like, maybe she's just not going to be tried.
They're just going to let her
and
go.
It's pretty involved with it's pretty, like, Federation involved crime, right? It's like she killed an officer, and they're just like, yeah, ship her off to Vulcan, I guess. Go back to the here, have your nun back. And I will say that I've been on Admiral Salt and Pepper had won me back in the past couple episodes, and then his little spiel today, I'm not so sure anymore.
Oh, okay.
Back to distrust.
Did
you feel like it was weird what he said?
I liked his analogy about, like, it being an orchestra. I think that it's what he said kind of sits at the heart of not what the problem is, but I think what the conflict is between what Trek has been in the past and what we want it to be, like, ideally, and maybe in the fandom as well, because I agree with what he's saying. I think that if we are an orchestra, the idea is to play the best that you can and please the audience, but that's maybe the metaphor is going too far. And we want to sometimes we have to sit back. Sometimes we have to just play the boring bass line while the violinist plays the solo or whatever. But the fact that, like, Burnham was fighting against that, it was like, that's a very Star Trek main character thing to do, to be like, no, I'm exceptional, and I'm going to take care of this problem, and I'm a hero. And I think that I'm guessing that it's part of Burnham's new role as not only being the hero, but also being the captain, and being somebody who has to settle for not being satisfied or not getting everything that that she wants for the ship sometimes. I think that's what was going on there. But I agreed with his sentiment. I mean, I didn't detect that it was sinister, but I could definitely see how a character like Burnham and maybe some viewers would be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, we're all, you know, first chair trumpeters all the time, right?
I agreed with him. I thought it was, like, accurate, but, like, you know, the hard news that, you know, you have to go through when you're a captain is, like, oh, you just kind of have to listen still or whatever. Yeah. But I also, then when he got to the thing about, oh, if, you know, if percussion and the winds are at war, that's none of your business because you're
drunk.
Playing the violin solo in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. And I was like, I think that maybe it would be her business a little bit, like, if she could prevent the war, you know what I mean? I was like, we're losing some, we keep talking, or at least we talked when we were talking about Prodigy, about how Star Trek, it seems like they want us to question authority.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's supposed to be, if that is a lesson that we're supposed to learn from Star Trek, or if we are, or if that has just been a hallmark of their, like, influential characters, that they question authority and do their own thing when they deem it necessary. But I was, yeah, I was a little bit like,
it is,
we're,
that
we're towing an interesting line where it's like, do we just accept orders without ever questioning them? Right, because it's none of my business what the rest of the fleet is doing or what,
yeah,
is going on over on Romulan, because my orders are to, like, just, like, load the missiles. Right, a bit of an extreme analogy, but
yeah, yeah, I, yeah, it's, I, we talk, so a little plug for Enterprising Individuals, like our main show. We talk about this all the time on that show, but I think that it's something that Star Trek, maybe it's working as designed. I don't know, but Star Trek does have our characters challenge authority all the time, but then also they're part of a military organization with a rank structure, and we're all serving, mm-hmm, the greater good or the people in charge. But the people in charge are almost invariably presented as being corrupt or having ill intent, you know, all the bad morals, mm-hmm, out there. And so, yeah, it's really stuck in this, like, you know, which is it? Are we going to go full collectivist here? You know, do we really want a communist Starfleet? Or are we going to stick with this sort of militaristic thing that is based on, at this point, Earth traditions from over 1,000 years ago? Like, yeah, what is it? And I wish that, maybe this is a big ask, but I wish that Discovery or some Star Trek show would really take a hard line in either direction and just, and kind of go with it. Especially, I guess maybe I do want Discovery to do that, because it is the future of the future now. You know, it's a whole new, setting for them to develop. And I'd like to see them do something more than just kind of reset this new world to, Federation standards circa 24th century.
Well, I think that you'll get that by the end of this season. I would assume, okay, that this new president. And,
I, for one, welcome our half Bajoran, half Cardassian overlord.
To some extent, Admiral Salt and Pepper, I think that we'll get an answer one way or the other.
Oh, man. Military coup led by Admiral Salt and Pepper.
Oh, my gosh.
I know whose side I'm on. I'd have to follow him.
I almost, like, want him to be a supervillain. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, I don't trust that guy.
You might,
but
get,
I,
your wish.
It'd be a little more fun. Yeah, yeah, it'd, we'll, be, see, a little bit more fun if he was, like, like, you know, the, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra flip, and the, once they got to, like, yeah, the, yeah, side, I wanted to be, like, actually.
How do you like these apples? Yeah, yeah.
I've slowly been infiltrating all of your ships with my own agents.
A bunch of salt and pepper holograms all appear, yeah, with guns. Well, here's hoping. We can only hope that the future, yeah, holds that for us. But that's it for our show this week. And thanks for joining us, listeners. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at EISTPod for updates and to get notified when new episodes of both Enterprising Individuals and Discoverage are released. You can tweet to us on the show by using the hashtag Discoverage or email us at EISTPod@gmail.com. And while you're on the internet, why not head to your listening platform of choice and subscribe to our show feed. Give us a rating and a review. because it really helps us out. If you want to help the show grow, you can stop by our Patreon page at patreon.com/EISTpod. And as always, if you like the show, tell a friend. Discoverage will return on December, what are we at here? December plus seven. I forgot how to add. I think the ninth, yeah. Yes. For the fourth episode of Star Trek Discovery. It's entitled All Is Possible, and we don't know anything about the episode yet, but we will be here next Thursday to cover it. We're going live once again at 8 p.m. Central, so join us then. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook at EISTpod to get notified when we go live and we're broadcasting. In the meantime, why not check out our main show, Enterprising Individuals, at enterprisingindividuals.com. Every Wednesday on the show, I and a special guest discuss in excruciating detail a selected episode from a Star Trek series. We also have news from the Treksphere and interviews with special guests. And the show is currently on holiday hiatus until next year, but you can access all six seasons of past episodes at enterprisingindividuals.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And in the meantime, may I suggest that you check out Backtrekking. That's the other Star Trek show on our network. On that podcast, I and my co-host Gooey Fame examine the real-world inspirations behind classic episodes of Star Trek. Our latest episode just dropped, and on it we are looking at the connections between the classic 1946 film La Belle et la Bête, that's Beauty and the Beast, and the Enterprise episode Exile. Be our guest and listen to that episode anywhere you get your podcasts. Ella, thanks as always for joining me to talk about tonight's episode of Discovery and remind people where they can find you online.
Thank you. My home podcast is called Generations Geek. I do it with my dad, so we're Generations Geek, wherever you listen to podcasts and on all social media. We just recorded, when I say just recorded, I mean this week we recorded a very lovely interview with Jim Johnson. So that should be up soon, barring any other, incidents that may affect the editing timeline.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
But so that's what we have coming up soon.
All right. Looking forward to that. And awesome. That is it for us. We are signing off. This is Aaron for Ella saying live long and prosper.